I will stick to a certain time frame. During the available time, I will raise a number of points and issues. There are many issues, many points. However, in the end, the time frame will decide. And because of the developments, if God wills, I will also have some speeches over the next few days. And so, if there is not enough time for some issues tonight, I will leave them to the upcoming nights. First of all, of course, the main topic will be that of the assassination of Martyr Samir Kantar and our stance towards the assassination operation. First of all, in just a few days, we will have Christmas, the birth of the Prophet Jesus, the Messiah. And so on this occasion, we would like to congratulate all the Christians and all Muslims in Lebanon and the world. We congratulate them on this great occasion. And after that, just a few days after Christmas, we shall witness the anniversary of the birth of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, son of Abdullah, may peace be upon him. Now, on that occasion, we also congratulate all the Muslims in Lebanon and the world on this great birth, this great occasion, and we pray to God with the dignity of these two holy prophets. We pray to God that on these occasions, that our people, the peoples of the world and the region, the peoples of our country, witness peace, tranquility, and happiness, and survive the crises, and to open the minds and the hearts of all in order to gain inspiration from the values of love which were carried by these two great prophets to the peoples of the world until the day of judgment. Second, we always, regarding the will of Allah, we always surrender to the will of God. Yesterday night, one of our brothers left us, one of those people who participated in the launching of Hezbollah and the Islamic Resistance in Lebanon ever since the very beginning. And he also put up with a lot of hardships and took a very large burden for 33 days. I am referring to the brother, Sheikh Muhammad Khatoum. May God have mercy on his soul. I personally, ever since 1977, he was my brother in soul and also a classmate. He studied with me in the holy city of Najaf and was a loyal friend throughout the whole path. And I will leave the speech about him for another occasion, whereby the funeral procession will be held in his village in Jouya in South Lebanon tomorrow, Tuesday. The funeral commemoration with the faithful men and women will be worthy of his status and his jihad. On this occasion, I extend condolences to his family, to his parents, to his relatives, to all his loved ones, and to all of our brothers and sisters on the occasion of his passing away. And I pray to God that he be granted heaven. Before I begin talking about the main topic which has preoccupied everyone over these past 2 days, I would also like to mention at the beginning of my speech which is related to a bloody incident that took place in Nigeria a few days ago, a very ugly catastrophe in the Zaria city in Nigeria, whereby hundreds of the Islamic movement were martyred. and hundreds were also wounded, and hundreds were also arrested. And amongst those, the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, the Allama Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, who was also wounded, and along with him, his wife and family were arrested. First of all, we join in with all those voices that condemned this massacre. And second, we condemn the silence of the international community and the international organizations regarding this ugly crime. When hundreds are killed, we are now hearing about more than 1,000 martyrs and hundreds of wounded and hundreds arrested. At the same time, we have utter silence throughout the world. Number three, we urge the Nigerian president and the rulers in Nigeria and the religious and political leaders and the political factions in Nigeria, we urge them to take strong action to hold those who committed this crime accountable and to release Sheikh Zakzaki and his family and his companions. And also to address this massacre in a humanitarian way, because all those who raise their voices against this massacre in more than one place in the world, and they are a minority, they don't want anything but good, peace, security, unity for Nigeria. Nigeria suffers from grave problems, first and foremost, disease. The disease which we call Boko Haram. We also find it our humanitarian and our ethical duty to express solidarity with those who are being oppressed and killed, those who did not do anything wrong and never entered into any battle, especially with Sheikh Zakzaki. 1 year ago, three of Sheikh Zakzaki's were killed in the processions of Al-Quds Day to commemorate Al-Quds and Palestine, killed by soldiers from the Nigerian military. Despite this, the Sheikh exercised self-restraint. Three of his children were killed in 1 hour, and there was a funeral procession held with the martyrs. He prayed for them. You can see the images. And he exercised self-restraint. He called for calm and unity and addressing this issue in the appropriate peaceful means. The presence of wise leaders, the presence of leaders with such wisdom who can confront these hardships, such leaders must receive solidarity, must be given solidarity. I am afraid, I fear that there are American, Israeli or Takfiri hands which stand behind this ugly act committed by military soldiers in the Nigerian army in order to drag Nigeria and its government and army and its people into a destructive sedition, as is taking place in many countries of the region. This current phase calls on all those people to exercise wisdom and decisiveness in addressing this matter and to be patient in front of the pain, in facing the pains. We pray for the martyrs and we pray that all those wounded also rise once again on their own two feet, and we also call for freedom and dignity and peace for Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki and his companions. Now we go back to the main issue of tonight. The main topic which has kept everyone preoccupied over these past 2 days is the assassination of the dean of the Lebanese prisoners held in Israeli prisons, the Mujahid, the leader, Samir al-Kuntar, the martyr Samir al-Kuntar. Now, within this framework, I will refer to points, first, second, and third points, to various points. First of all, regarding the facts, there is no doubt, we have no doubt, meaning we are completely certain that the Israeli enemy is the one which carried out this assassination operation by a military operation. We are not witnessing an ambiguous security operation which requires us to look deep, to investigate, to search for the trails and hence reaching a decisive conclusion about who stands behind that. No, the Israeli warplanes launched precise missiles, precision missiles. They targeted a building where Samir Kantar and others were living, a residential building, and hence this residential building was targeted, and that led to the martyrdom of Samir along with other Syrian resistance fighters and a number of civilians who were living in the same building. Now, regardless of whether or not now they discussed, did the Israeli warplanes, did they enter Syrian airspace and bomb this residential building, or is it that the Israeli warplanes were in the Golan Heights airspace and didn't violate Syrian airspace? These are details which have no impact, except those who want to talk about Israel and Russia, and tonight we don't have time to speak about this. For us, this makes no difference. This is a technical detail, if it was in Syrian airspace or not, these Israeli warplanes. What is clear is that the Israeli warplanes bombed the residential building, and they targeted this residential building in Jadamana in the Damascus countryside, which led to the martyrdom of those beloved people. And by the way, I would like to extend my condolences to all of their families, and I also pray for all those who were wounded that they also soon be back once again to their normal lives. This bitter attempt, they tried to say that there are some groups in the Syrian opposition, they tried to say that they were the ones that carried out this assassination, but this is completely untrue. Anyway, those who say this, although it's not true, but let's assume it is, they are hence condemning these armed groups, which means that they serve the Israeli goals and the Israeli interests. Because he who kills a man and a symbol of the level of Samir Kantar is doing a great service to Israel. However, this is empty talk which has no truth to it whatsoever. Second, we know, and Brother Samir also knew, because we had talked about this, and the Israelis also were not hiding it. The Israelis always spoke directly and indirectly. They said they would not leave Samir Kantar alive. Ever since day one, ever since the first day when he was released from prison, and this was well known. And so this threat always existed over all of the years and the months and the weeks, and over the past few days, Samir was always under threat. And this threat was present, as I said, from day one, because Israel was saying very clearly that it will not forgive Samir Kantar for what he did in his past, or his perseverance in prison, his firmness in confronting those who his captives, and also regarding his commitment to the resistance. And unfortunately, Israel does not forgive. Those who do forgive are our governments, our rulers. They forgive people who commit massacres from Deir Yassin to Qana. However, Israel does not forgive. This was well known. And that was before any talk about a Syrian popular resistance in the Golan Heights or the beginning of any such efforts. Yes, this might have given an additional motive to the enemy so that they could target Samir. If I want to summarize the first and second points, the conclusion I want to make is that we completely, decisively, we hold Israel responsible for the assassination of the martyr, the leader Samir Kantar. There is no room for doubt here. We don't need to wait for any discussion. Number three, on this night, I do not want to talk about what distinguishes this martyr and his jihadist value, what is related to him. We shall speak about these issues during the ceremony which will be held in a few days for him. However, I will tonight speak about an issue which many have spoken of. Samir al-Qantar, he who loved Palestine, Palestine for him was his whole life. It filled his heart and his mind, his existence, its fate and the fate of its people and what those people suffered from, especially the prisoners and the future of its resistance, was always his main, first and foremost concern. In the first meeting I had with him after he was freed, we met and I spoke to him. Usually we don't oblige our brothers to take choices. We give them the choice. We hope they take certain choices, but we don't oblige them to take certain choices. He asked me, what are you thinking? What should I do? Now I've came back, I am free once again, and I have certain qualifications, certain capabilities. I told him back then that he had many choices, politically speaking, in the media, culturally, academically, militarily. And I also mentioned the military or jihadist angle as one of the choices. And he told me during that meeting, he said the same thing he said to all the people when he was welcomed in the Raya sports ground in southern Beirut. He said, I came from Palestine to go back and return to Palestine. Now, if you recall back then, some people were thinking, will Samir become a political figure? Will he become, will he form a political party? But he never thought about this. And he told me, he said, from now, you can assume that I am ready to participate in any military operation, be it on the Lebanese border with occupied Palestine, or in the Shib'a farms, or inside the Palestinian territories. He said, I'm ready to cross the border once again to fight in Palestine and be martyred. From this point, I'm not waiting for anything except this. I don't want to be a leader, nor do I want to be an official, nor do I want to have any position. He said, it's an honor for me to be a fighter, a resistance fighter in this honorable Islamic resistance. This is Samir. This is the true nature of Samir, which must be spoken of tonight. This person who loved, he is not only a believer, he's a believer, he is committed, he is ready to sacrifice, but also out of his love, out of his faith, out of his knowledge. Now, does the Israeli enemy imagine that by assassinating Samir Qantar and others similar to Samir Qantar, that they could eliminate this love and this faith and this great readiness to make sacrifice, which we see in the men of, and the women of this ummah? We have decades of conflict with the enemy. Many leaders were killed, secretary generals, intellectuals, leaders, media personnel, cultural figures, and tens of thousands of martyrs have fallen from the peoples of our region in Palestine and Lebanon and Syria and Egypt and Jordan and the rest of the region. What was the result? Did this ummah, did these people, did these generations abandon Palestine and the Palestinian cause and the resistance against the enemy and confronting the enemy? No, not at all. The result was that a generation inherited resistance from the other generation and also handed this resistance to the following generation. The blood of Samir Qantar, just as the blood of all of the martyrs who have fallen, from be it Palestinians or Lebanese or others, this blood says that the flag of resistance in confronting Israel and for the sake of liberating the territory and also defeating the Israeli project in this region, this flag will not fall. whoever might be killed, whoever be martyred, whoever be tortured or arrested, this flag will not fall to the ground. This flag will go from shoulder to shoulder, from hand to hand, from generation to generation. Look today, look at occupied Palestine. This is a generation from the age of Samir Kantar, when Samir Kantar left his village in southern Lebanon to the northern occupied Palestine. The generation today in Palestine is the same age as Samir Kantar was when he went ahead to carry out the operation in northern Palestine, the northern section of occupied Palestine. The young men and women of Palestine today, they are facing death with death. Tens of them have been martyred with the stabbing operations by also using the cars as a way also to attack the people. This has ignited fear in the hearts of the enemy and the leaders of the enemy. When we see a young woman, a very young woman, like Ashraq al-Tanani, and when I speak about this young woman today, I'm talking about an example which reflects all the young men and women of Palestine who have been martyred or who are still continuing with their efforts. When I looked at her articles and what she wrote on her website, I discovered that this young woman, how vigilant she was, how she had a very clear vision and also a strong and firm determination and a deep understanding for the cause which she wants to sacrifice for, the cause which she believes in. Also her knowledge of the enemy and her knowledge of who is the friend, and also specifying the priorities, the calmness in the mind and in choosing. She does not behave hastily. She is not taken in by media campaigns. And then this level of readiness for sacrifice, sacrificing oneself, and determination to sacrifice oneself in order to reach martyrdom. Today she is an example of many of the young men and women of Palestine. Their hearts are filled with the love of this holy land and of the sanctities and the love also of freedom. These people have the same love which Samir Kantar had ever since he was young. This love which remained in his heart until the moment whereby the missile, the Zionist missile, ripped him apart. Now, the blood of Samir and his martyrdom and his cleansed blood, this will only increase the love of the Palestinian and Arab youth, increase their determination and vigilance. This martyrdom will make Samir Kantar a school and a symbol which summarizes all of his history and steadfastness and his commitment until his very last breath. And so, now number four, the stance I want to make. Regarding the stance, I will go back to some of the terms, some of the points I made during the speech after the assassination of our leaders in Quneitra at the beginning of this year. That speech was made on the 30th of January 2015. I'll read it to you in detail, without changing one letter, because the stance is the same. On that day, we said the following. When Israel attacks, because I was talking about Israel's assaults and aggressions, we said that when Israel attacks anywhere, in whatever way, and at any time, it is the right, the resistance has the right to respond wherever it may be, in whatever fashion, at any place. That's it. The second sentence, my message today That's what I said again on the 30th of January 2015. I said the following. My message today is that from now on, any leader of Hezbollah, of Hezbollah's resistance, any fighter from Hezbollah who is targeted, we will hold Israel responsible for this, and we shall consider that it is our right to respond at any place and at any time and in the fashion which we deem appropriate, in the way which we deem appropriate. This was said on the 30th of January 2015. Tonight, I say to the enemy and to the friend, the martyr Samir Kantar is one of us, and he is a leader in our resistance, and he was killed by the Israelis with all certainty, and it's our right to respond to his assassination at the place and time and in the way which we deem appropriate. This is our right. And I'd also like to add tonight, we in Hezbollah, we will practice this right with God's help, God willing. And let everybody make his preparations according to what I said. Now, within the same context, now we've ended with the issue of Samir. Now I want to continue within the same context, the assassinations and the killing and the announced or the declared war on Hezbollah and on this resistance. We have the measures and the American sanctions that target Hezbollah on more than one level. Over the past few months, we've had sanctions issued, and also over the past few days, a series of decisions and measures were taken which aim, according to their perspective, they aim to isolate us and to further strengthen the chokehold on us on more than one level, be it financially or on the media or morally or politically, etc. Now, here I'd also like to refer to some points. Number one, ever since 1995, maybe before, but around 1995, the Americans put together a terrorist list and they placed Hezbollah on this list of terrorist organizations. We, Hezbollah, have been placed on the list of terrorist organizations from the beginning of the 1990s. We have been placed as Hezbollah, an organization, and also as individuals from the movement. And for decades, the Americans, by their international position, they tried to impose this description of Hezbollah on the international organizations and the countries of the world. They weren't successful. So this designation of a terrorist group is not the designation used by the UN, because there's no Security Council resolution. Even the EU recently designated the military wing as a terrorist organization. Russia, China, some countries that use the veto, the permanent members, don't designate us as a terrorist organization. Many countries of the world, in the eyes of the people of the world, we are not a terrorist organization. Anyway, despite the American and the Israeli efforts for decades, they were not successful in enshrining this designation or making this designation the common general designation. This doesn't mean they've given up. They'll continue with these efforts. Now, what the Americans resorted to recently is something else. Because in the end, a terrorist organization, the Americans, who are the masters of terrorism in the world, who support terrorist governments and terrorist organizations, they designate us as a terrorist group. How much can this make a difference? Now they've made a new step to consider Hezbollah as a criminal organization, not a terrorist organization, a criminal organization. What are we accused of? Number one, we're accused of drug trafficking. We are drug traffickers. Number two, they accuse us of money laundering. Number three, also what is clear that the Congress, I believe that's right, I haven't demanded it, but they also requested the investigations and about us carrying out human trafficking. That's where we've reached lately. I don't want to focus on all of this to discuss these accusations in detail, but I'd like to say that these accusations are unjust, they are false, they are completely untrue, and it is our duty to categorically, decisively deny them, and we are not called upon to give proof of our innocence, because they are the ones who are accusing us, and they should give evidence if they have evidence. Although we've gotten used to them when they make accusations and making judgments according to accusations without any evidence. I'd like to say this is a political accusation. It's within a political framework. It's within the framework of a political and security and military confrontation or battle in the region. The main aim of this accusation, the first and foremost aim, is to tarnish Hezbollah's image, to tarnish its image in the eyes of the people of the world and the people of the region. They spent billions of dollars. This is what their former ambassador to Beirut said, the former US ambassador to Beirut. They spent billions of dollars in order to create obstacles, to build walls and borders between the Lebanese people and Hezbollah. When they look at Hezbollah as a genuine resistance movement in this region, they want to harm it in any way, and this is part of the war. However, these fabricated accusations, the fabrication is clear to many, and its falseness will be uncovered to all those who have been misled. We have a very clear example in this regard, and it's happened very recently. Just a few days ago, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, after a long investigation, it submitted its report about the Iranian nuclear program, and it considered in this report that the Iranian nuclear program is 100% peaceful and 100% civil, and there is no military angle, and at the very least, because they want to always maybe want to point to some gaps, they said at the very least, from 2009 until today, there is nothing which points to any military dimension in the Iranian nuclear program. Okay. So they submitted this report just a few days ago to the Board of Governors in the IAEA. And we have the American side, the American member of the Board of Governors, and others who objected or who collaborated against Iran over the past few years. And the contents of the report was ratified and endorsed by all the sides, and so the case was closed. The case which accused Iran of having a military nuclear program, or accused Iran of striving to possess a nuclear program, the Americans were accusing Iran for many years. Some Westerners, some Europeans were always continuing to make these accusations. Don't forget Israel Netanyahu, this year, the year before that, on more than one occasion, even in his speech at the United Nations, because today, after the report issued by the IAEA, Netanyahu should become a laughingstock in the eyes of the people of the world, even amongst his own people. If you recall, he had that cardboard with the drawing and red and black and pointing with a pen like a teacher and saying in a few months Iran will possess a nuclear bomb. Then the IAEA issues a report, and the Board of Governors, in consensus, which has Americans and Westerners, says that there is nothing which points to a military dimension, at least from 2009. Case closed. Although they almost wage a war, which would have led to the destruction of the region if this war had taken place. They also imposed sanctions on more than 80 million people in Iran. different forms of sanctions, and this also led to victims. They threatened, and along with them, some of their tools, some of their Arab tools also participated, and they exerted great pressures on Iran and all of Iran's friends in the whole world. Then the whole issue ended when the political accusation was exhausted and when Iran persevered and when it reached an appropriate settlement, the case was closed. And the IAEA said there's nothing of the sort, nothing of a military program. Now, our story is easy when you compare it to a country of the size of Iran, which was accused of striving, and when they said that Iran will possess nuclear weapons in just a few months, and so let's bomb Iran for this mistake which it didn't commit, for this thing which it didn't commit. Regarding us, of course, they won't accuse us of building nuclear weapons. In the end, we are a group, we are a resistance organization, the movement. That's what they have. What can they say? They say you're either a terrorist organization or a criminal organization. There's nothing else. That's the only thing they can say. They are the only things they can say, these accusations. Now, in confronting these lies, now I will refer to the remaining points. Because in the end, they will run out of lies. Whatever be the length of this rope of lies, in the end, it will end. It will cease to exist. Anyway, I say that we are not of such people in front of our God, in front of our people, in front of our families, in the eyes of our families, in the eyes of the people of the regional world. We are not such a group. But what is most important of all, God bears witness that we are not such an organization. However, if this is part of psychological war and a soft war and trying to inflict harm on our determination or have an impact on our determination, that will not make any difference. Now, regarding the repercussions, financially speaking, okay, they imposed, for example, on the banks of the world that they should not accept any money from Hezbollah, any deposits, and also not to make any money transfers for Hezbollah. That's ended from a very long time. We don't have any deposits in the banks of the world, and we don't send our money by wire transfers. Number two, they're now putting pressure on the Lebanese banks and on the Lebanese Central Bank. They say that any Lebanese bank, when it's said that this person or this organization or this certain group is affiliated with Hezbollah, and so automatically the central bank or this Lebanese bank must take the following measures. Of course, they are all negative measures. Now, I say, we also mentioned this before, but just to once again reiterate, we don't have money in Lebanese banks. In order not to corner anyone, we never did, nor do we have now any money. We don't have money that we deposit in banks. As they say, it comes and we quickly consume it. And we also don't send our money by wire transfers, but via Lebanese banks. And so there is no need for the central bank, nor for the directors of the Lebanese banks to be anxious or afraid that the Americans are now following them or on their tail. Number four, I repeated on more than one occasion, I say it once again, we don't have any commercial activity, nor do we have any investments. We don't have money that we invest. We have nothing of this sort, and we don't have any business companies. We don't have any partnerships with any businesses or Lebanese businessmen or non-Lebanese businessmen. The money we have, we spend it on our resistance and on the families of our martyrs and our wounded and our mujahideen and our organizations. What remains, we keep it aside for the difficult periods ahead. However, we don't have one penny which we invest or which we make business with, or we deposit with someone. So, based upon all this, previously I pointed out to this issue, but today I will speak about it in a more serious way than ever before. And the Lebanese state and the Lebanese government and the Lebanese banks must take responsibility of protecting the Lebanese citizens and the Lebanese businessmen. What is happening now? It's enough that when the Americans make any signal, when they take any unjust step, because we don't have any business activity, nor have we deposited money with anyone, when we have any signal, for example, which says that this money from person X or for business company Y, this money is for Hezbollah or this company is for Hezbollah. In Lebanon, they quickly shake and tremble and the measures begin, they begin to take measures. Doesn't this country have sovereignty? Don't we have a law? Don't we have a judiciary? Don't we have an authority? We, as a political party, they will not harm us in any way. They won't get any penny. Yes, in such a way, just like Samir Kantar and others. But however, with all these measures, they can't do anything. However, we have Lebanese businessmen, we have Lebanese companies, we have investors, Lebanese investors in Lebanon and beyond. The Americans now, when they wish, especially if they want to target a certain environment or the friends of a certain political group or political camp, they send names. And in Lebanon, some banks are taking measures, and the director of the bank is not being able to sleep. That's unacceptable in Lebanon. These people are Lebanese citizens, which must be given protection by the state. I'm not calling on the Lebanese state, nor am I calling on any of the Lebanese institutions to protect Hezbollah, nor to protect Hezbollah's weapons or its money, nor any of Hezbollah's sons and daughters. Allah protects us. We protect ourselves. We know how to protect ourselves. However, at the very least, take responsibility for the people, Lebanese citizens, Lebanese businessmen, Lebanese companies. Let there be some sovereignty, some really courageous men. Nobody's calling on you to wage war on America, nor to declare war on America. What is required from you is to be courageous, whereby if they accuse anyone, you say, this money, Hezbollah, money laundering, human trafficking, do you have evidence? If you do have evidence, bring me this evidence and we'll refer it to the judiciary. We accept this. Get the evidence and give it to the judiciary. If the judiciary also issues a verdict and says this money is for Hezbollah, take this money. I'm not saying that we will use it for charity because it's not ours. This is number two, because it's clear that this is not a law which was these measures taken unanimously in the Congress. Now these steps have begun to be taken inside the country, and I warn against bowing down to the American will in this regard. Number three, the most dangerous measure is that related to the media outlets. Whether it be the media outlets that are considered close to us, like Al-Manar and Noor, others, or outlets that are accused of supporting us or accused of receiving support from us, reaching also the level whereby any media outlet is accused of being sympathetic towards us. They also threatened all of these outlets. They put together a mechanism, a report, there certain days, and the Congress and the American government will give responses. What does this mean? It means they want to accuse you, they want to judge you in absentia, they want to issue a verdict, they want to punish you, they want to fight you, and they want to kill you, and you can't say one word. If you do say a word, then your voice must not reach anywhere in this world. This is America, which speaks about freedom and democracy and accepts diverse opinions and speaks about a just judiciary and a just legal system. So I'm accused. Allow me to defend myself, to explain to the world. That's forbidden. your media outlets cannot remain, and they might even reach the level whereby any media outlet in the world, which allows anyone from Hezbollah, not just from me, which allows anyone from Hezbollah or a friend or a fair person to explain or to clarify, would then this outlet would then be accused of supporting a terrorist organization or a criminal organization. Of course, this is the most dangerous step or measure that they are resorting to. Bearing in mind that anyone who has a satellite and watches television can see thousands of TV stations which call day and night for takfir, for killing, for bloodshed, for the slaughtering of children, for terrorist operations, for eliminating others, destruction, sabotage, occupying territories of others, violence. And that's okay. However, you and those who are of your same nature from the resistance movement, your resistance movement, you're targeted. The real reason is that related to Israel. It's not because we have a political stance in Yemen or a political stance somewhere else. This might have increased the issue, but the main matter here is that you're a resistance movement. You have a cause which is confronting the Zionist project, which is the main part of the American project in the region. Now they make an excuse that you had a guest in who insulted the Emir or the King. This is happening in many media outlets, but nobody targeted anyone. What is the aim of all of this is to target the resistance movements, the language of the resistance, the culture of the resistance, the will of the resistance. They don't want all of this to be shown in the world on the media outlets. That's part of the confrontation. The media is part of the battle. We must not surrender, and we shall not surrender, and we will look for all of the means, all possible means, in order for the voice of our resistance and the voice of resistance and the voice of all those who reject the American-Israeli project, we will search for all possible means to send our voice. And God opens the doors, and God in this regard will give us ways, will reveal ways. This is an open battle, an open-ended battle, and media is part of it. But what is most important of all regarding all of these measures and these sanctions, which of course the American tools, without any question, without any investigation, they run along with the American will and they implement the American will, be it financially or in the media or regarding the terrorist designation or the criminal organization designation, like some Arab governments are doing. However, what is most important is how do we view this? Now, you're looking at we looked at the negative side. Let's look at the positive side. The preoccupation of the American administration with us, with Hezbollah, the Congress sits down and meets and discusses, and we also have a unanimous decision and to announce new forms of war against us. This makes us, first of all, this makes us certain that we are right. They only increased our confidence, our reassurance, our certainty that we are right and we are on the right front and we are also in the right axis, we are in the right battle. And he who finds himself, whether he realizes it or not, he who finds himself a partner of the Americans and the Israelis, he who finds himself on their front, on their side, let him reconsider in his mind and his religion and Quran and his nationalism and his people and his ethics, which he speaks about. Second, these measures, when it comes to the positive side, yes, this is a recognition. The Americans recognize us. We're not we're not a small group. It's not as if nobody notices us. We don't have a small impact. No, this is a recognition that Hezbollah I don't say a regional power, a local power which has regional role. This is a recognition that Hezbollah plays a big role in Lebanon and the region, and in confronting the Israeli enemy and the Israeli and the Zionist project and the American project, and in confronting the project to practice hegemony over our region. And by being part of the Axis, we don't make the allegation that we are the only side. We are part of the Axis. Up until now, we have toppled American and Israeli projects in the region in 1982 and after in 2000 and 2006 and in 2005 and in 2010 and now in 2015. There are American projects to exercise hegemony and to seize control of the sovereignty and the culture of our region. We are part of the Axis that is toppling this project. This means that we are important. And so for this reason, the Congress, Republicans and Democrats must make decisions and also put together frameworks to follow up these decisions. And during a certain time frame, Obama must give a response to the Congress. It's not that they just took a decision and that's it, and not just psychological war, they're continuing. And we say, number three, that we understand this. Look how easily, how understanding we are. We understand it, we understand them. When I'm their enemy and they are our enemy, and this is something which we are proud of, this is a something good for us, good from our perspective, to be enemies of America, enemies of Israel, to be enemies for those who stole and are continuing to steal the resources of our people, and those who want to eliminate our culture and our civilization, and to take away our freedom, to take away our people. From our perspective, we understand it. Yes, we understand that they would take all of these measures, financial measures, also the measures on the media, the security measures, the military steps, because we are in a state of confrontation. And in this confrontation, we will not bow down, we will not surrender, we will not retreat. And I say at the end of the speech, because it's clear the time frame has ended, I will leave the other topics, some of them are very important, I will leave the other topics to the upcoming speeches. I say to the Americans and the Israelis and to their allies and their tools in the region, those people who impose sanctions and want to isolate and want to strengthen a chokehold, and the killers like those who killed the martyr Samir Kuntar just a few days ago, I say to them, do what you want. Kidu kaidakum usyu sayakum, which is a saying for Sayyida Zainab, the sister of Imam Hussein, you will not be able to do anything. This was said in Karbala before, and history has proven that these words are true. These words are still true today. Where are the killers? This is what Sayyida Zainab said. Where is Yazid? Where is Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad? Where is Umar ibn Sa'd? Where is Shimr ibn Joshan? And where is Hussein? Who, just a few weeks ago, Hussein attracted tens of billions from all over the world. They came on foot. They walked hundreds of kilometers in the cold weather, in danger as well, under the bombings and the threats of the suicide bombers and the takfiris, and with all love they walked to him and they visited him and they raised his name. The truth which was said back in Karbala, today, now, on the year 1937, Islamic calendar, we say, from the same perspective, whether it be the media or financial isolation or killing or slaughtering us or isolating us or waging war against us, none of this will change anything. This will end in their defeat and in our victory, just as it has always happened until now. All the measures which have been taken and which are being taken will only increase If I want to continue with that same quote, do what you want, you will not eliminate our memory. And what you do, do what you want, plan as much as you want, and your numbers will not have no, make no difference. All of these measures will only increase our vision, will increase our conviction of the righteousness of our cause, and will increase our determination to continue to walk on this path. I will now end, and I hope, of course, to meet you over the next few days, God willing. May God have mercy on our martyr, the commander, the martyr, Shah Samir Qantar, and also our religious cleric, Sheikh Muhammad Khatun. May God have mercy on all of the martyrs who have fallen, be it in Germana in Syria, or in Zaria in Nigeria, or the martyrs of Palestine who are being sacrificed day by day, all in all of the arenas in Syria, Iraq, Yemen, in all places whereby there is a confrontation with the tyrants and the arrogant powers. May God have mercy on all of the martyrs. We pledge that we'll continue to walk on their path and achieve their goals. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.